Welcome. You're listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. I'm Ron Fraser. This morning we're talking to Lionel Robinson. Lionel lives over in Pensacola. He's one of the people that was pretty seriously affected by our recent hurricanes. Lionel, before we get going talking about Baha'i stuff, why don't you tell people a little bit about the joys you've been having with your living in a FEMA trailer?
Oh, yes. And incidentally, that noise that you may hear in the background is the Blue Angels. They practiced their performance on Tuesday morning. A good bit of it very close to being over our house.
Yeah.
We lived in a FEMA trailer in our driveway since Hurricane Ivan, which was September the 16th of 2004. We were in the trailer for about a year and a half, and recently we've been making the transition into the house. Friday they came and inspected it, locked it up, and they will be coming to haul it off very shortly.
Oh, you're actually getting rid of the FEMA trailer now?
We are waiting for them to come take it out of the driveway. I'm looking forward to getting a picture of it going away. We were extremely happy and grateful to get it because we had no bathroom in the house, no kitchen, no way to do anything like that.
Yeah.
We were very happy to have it, and we felt comfortable in it for about that year and a half. And suddenly when we were able to get into the house, it's amazing how small it is. Now, Harriet and I go, when we were both in the trailer cleaning it up, we kept running into each other and couldn't figure out how in the world the two of us actually lived in that thing.
What all happened to your house when the hurricane hit?
We had very little windstorm damage. There was a tree that fell on the house and put a couple of small holes in the roof. Most of our damage came from the 3 feet of salt water and sewer backup that came into the house.
Hmm.
We had put a lot of things up, but you know, it's amazing how many of your possessions are within 3 feet of the floor.
So you're pretty close to the water then, to the Gulf.
Right, we're on the west side of the bay and can look across the bay to the 3 mile bridge going out to Gulf Breeze from downtown Pensacola. So we, from our front porch, we can see right across the bay.
That sounds like a nice place to live if there isn't a hurricane in the neighborhood.
It is very nice. We have water view until the people across the street rebuild their house. When they rebuild, then we will be looking at their house instead of the bay.
Yeah.
But Ivan was a kind of a mixture of things for us. We had some loss. We lost personal things that, you know, we're not going to be able to recover. I worked as a freelance writer for a while, and everything I ever had published, my collection of that is gone. But on the other hand, we've been working on the house ourselves and enjoying it. We took the whole inside of the house out to the studs and putting it back. And we're going to have a much better house than we had before it started. It was built in 1940.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is brought back up to standards, and we are very grateful for the good things that have come out of this.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's talk about some Baha'i stuff for a while. Can you tell me how you became a Baha'i?
Yes. My daughter, Rachel, had been a Baha'i for 10 years and had been telling me about the faith and giving me publications and information about it. I wasn't really all that impressed. I remember she was talking about prophecy about the lesser peace, which is not really a spiritual peace, but a time when humanity can dispense with using war to settle differences.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying, you know, that's ridiculous. Can you imagine what kind of miracle would have to happen just in the Soviet Union for that to happen? That was not long before the wall came down.
Mm-hmm.
My wife became a Baha'i. We were living in LaGrange, Georgia, and Eulalia Bobo Taylor, who is the prize fighter Joe Lewis's sister, lived in that area. We got to know her. She's a Baha'i. We would go over and visit her fairly frequently, and the subject with Eulalia was just about always the Baha'i faith. And Harriet, while we were there, Harriet decided to declare and signed her declaration card sitting at Eulalia's dining room table. And about a year later, Harriet's son, Rick, he decided to declare. Came over to visit us, and Rick also signed his declaration card at Eulalia's dining room table. I hadn't declared. I was reading things that Harriet was leaving for me to read. You know, there were things that I just couldn't accept, specific things in the teachings. And
Tell me about some of those things that you found difficult.
Well, just one thing, I couldn't see how there could be justice without, when people only had one lifetime. I really believed that reincarnation was about the only way of accomplishing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been through a number of different investigations in my time, so my beliefs were kind of a mixture of Christianity, Buddhism, New Age, whatever. I had this sort of a la carte religion where I had selected from what I felt was right from each other. Eulalia one day said, "Now, you are..." Eulalia was very direct, more than Baha'is are supposed to be. And she said, "Now, you are just an undeclared Baha'i, so that means you have a question. You ask your question, and I answer it, and you can sign your card." Well, I didn't ask, but I realized later that all of those other things that I had been concerned about really were of no concern, that there was really only one question. She was right. I did have a question, and there was only one, and that was, is Baha'u'llah who he claims to be? If he is, then those other things don't much matter. If he isn't, then it also doesn't matter. That really is the only question that I decided that was important. So we had moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee. One of the Baha'is there was the park ranger at Red Clay, the Red Clay State Park, National Park, I'm not sure. It was, at any rate, the site of the last council fire the Cherokees held before they started off on the Trail of Tears. And there was a gathering there one Sunday of, it was Baha'is and Native Americans from a number of different tribes. And I joked about it. I came back from there and I said, you know, I really wanted to belong. I felt like such an outsider and I wanted to belong. And I knew when I came back that I either wanted to be a Baha'i or an Indian, but I didn't want to do that thing where you cut your wrist and share blood. So I figured maybe the Baha'i faith was a better option.
At least the easy way out.
Yeah, right. I told this later to a Native American who worked there at the park, and he said, man, you don't have to cut your wrist. You just spit in your palm and shake hands. Who knows? I might have been an Indian. I came back, and I was joking about that, but the thing is, it really did cause me to focus on whether or not, because I'd just been going along for a while, you know, with no particular pressure. I'll get around to this decision one day. But that gathering did cause me to focus my attention on maybe I need to really make a decision here, one way or the other, instead of leaving this as an open question.
Hmm.
So I thought, okay, how will I decide if, if Baha'u'llah is who he says he is? And I did not go through the elaborate procedure that is outlined in a book, The Challenge of Baha'u'llah, that a friend of mine wrote. And I came to the conclusion that, one, Baha'u'llah had never been educated, had never gone to school, hadn't had any formal training or teaching in anything, spent most of his life totally isolated from the world or any influence of great thinkers or great philosophies, because he didn't come in contact with them in the prison in Akka. And I decided that if his writings are internally coherent and cover spiritual teachings, sociology, how nations should get along together, how individuals should get along together, how families should conduct themselves, economic instructions, and all of this is internally consistent. And I had done just enough writing that I knew how difficult it is to keep anything of any length internally consistent.
Yes.
So I decided that if he could do all of this with no education and no input, that he must have been divinely guided. And I figured if he was divinely guided, he must be who he claimed to be. And if he really was who he claimed to be, a manifestation of God who was speaking for God, then where he and I disagreed, I would give him the benefit of the doubt.
There you go.
Figuring that he had a better source of information than I did, because certainly my philosophy was not internally consistent, and I had been working at it for a long time. So I decided to become a Baha'i.
Mm-hmm.
And I have tried a number of things like that, and I tend to sort of try things on, roles or whatever, to see if I can live with them, or a new idea, I'll see if I can live with it. And I remember I had in the back of my head the feeling that, okay, I will do this, and I will really get more into the investigation of the faith and learn what I should do, and I will do this until I come across something in the writings that I find to be just internally wrong, or something that I simply cannot, until I find something wrong with it.
Right.
Well, that was about 15 years ago. I'm still looking.
There you go. So you're reserving judgment.
Well, who knows? You know, I haven't read all of it yet. But after, this is certainly the longest I've ever investigated something without being able to find anything wrong with it.
Right. Well, what about the Baha'is talk about progressive revelation? How did you feel about the other messengers of God? Could you warm up to the idea that Buddha and Krishna and Muhammad were in some ways equivalent to Jesus Christ? Did that seem shocking to you? It seemed to remember that you came from wasn't your father a minister?
No, my grandfather made a single attempt at being a Methodist circuit rider.
When Maybe
he
that's
really
what I
was
remember.
Riding a horse. He unfortunately was not very good at it. By the time he was halfway through his sermon, the congregation was laughing so hard at him. This is true.
That's great.
The congregation was laughing at him so hard that he didn't finish. He walked down the aisle and out of the church, got on his horse and went home, and that was the end of his career as a Methodist circuit rider.
I see.
Trying to learn from that perhaps preparation is a good thing when you're doing public speaking.
Okay, well let's get back to the question about
progressive revelation.
Yeah,
I had a lot of trouble with that because I did grow up in the Methodist Church, and during I really had the strong feelings having come from a Christian background. As far as the other messengers of God, that intellectually, I guess I could see that was interesting. I could see things in what they taught that were valid, but I strictly just looked at Baha'u'llah, and I figured that was the question that I really needed to answer. I did not investigate as part of that whether or not I could also accept Muhammad or Zoroaster or whoever. I think that would have been it would have been complex enough that it would have allowed me to procrastinate forever on the decision.
Okay, so you accept Muhammad simply because Baha'u'llah says that he's a messenger. You didn't investigate Islam separately.
No, I was not able to go from Jesus to Muhammad to Baha'u'llah. It wasn't really until I had accepted Baha'u'llah, turned and looked back the other direction, that these others sort of fell into place. Until then, I saw them, as I think most Christians do, as parallel paths rather than lying on a continuous line. So these were all parallel paths that you had to move off to the side to get to. And I just didn't do that. The biggest reluctance that I had becoming a Baha'i was that I really felt like I was, because of this, moving to the side. I really felt that I was leaving Christianity and walking away from Jesus to get to Baha'u'llah. And intellectually, I knew that the Baha'i faith was talking about these being a progression and the return of the same spirit. But emotionally, that was not the way I felt about it.
Yeah.
So I really felt like I was walking away from Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very difficult to do.
Right.
It really wasn't until later that I realized that in the Bible there's quite a bit of progressive revelation, with one messenger after another bringing a new message and changing what was there before, each one of them being an increase in the spiritual maturity requirement that's placed on people. For instance, in the Bible where it says, if a person puts out your eye, you can put out his eye. If a person knocks out a tooth, you can knock out his tooth. And to us now, that seems like a license to retaliate. At the time, it was a restriction, because before that law was revealed in the Bible, the rule was, if a person puts out your eye, you kill him. If he knocks out your tooth, you kill him.
I never looked at it that way, but I'm...
Yeah, I mean, that was a great spiritual step forward.
Yeah, it's great.
It's pretty crude today.
Yeah.
And when you get up to Jesus, if somebody hits you and knocks out your tooth, you turn the other cheek.
Right.
Which is more of a spiritual demand on each of us.
Well, how do you feel about your decision now, as after 10 or 15 years, you look back on that time when you felt like you were leaving Jesus, and how is your feeling about that changed over the years? Do you feel like you've integrated Jesus back into your life?
Yes, from the perspective of the Baha'i faith, from the perspective of the belief in Baha'u'llah and the acceptance of his teachings, and above all of that, the acceptance of Baha'u'llah's teachings about unity, oneness, the fact that these are not a lot of separate individuals. This is a continuation of one ongoing revelation. It does put Jesus in a more central location again. I was just talking to Harriet, my wife, yesterday, but in the Bible, there's only one Persian word in the Bible, and that's Magi. And Magi are Zoroastrian priests, not wise men. It is a technical term for Zoroastrian priest. The Magi in the Bible found Jesus based on following prophecies from Zoroaster. So if Zoroaster wasn't guided by God and speaking for him, it would be extremely difficult for him to have come up with such precise prophecy that he was able to, these three people were able to take them and get and find Jesus.
Right.
Because that manger, I've been in it, and it's not a very big place to find. It does have a church over it now, but it was just a kind of a little cave. So that, I think, is also a thing that I've come to realize about progressive revelation.
Hmm. Okay, well, thanks, Lionel. I've enjoyed our talk today. I hope the listeners have, too. And I hope I'll be able to talk to you again.
Thank you, Ron. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i Faith, call 1-800-22-UNITE, or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. Look on the internet at www.baha'i.org for the international site, or www.baha'i.us for the U.S. site. Remember that Baha'i is B-A-H-A-I. In Florida, our website is www.emeraldcoastbaha'is, that's with an S at the end, .org, emeraldcoastbaha'is.org. You can email me at panhandlebaha'is@aol.com. Thanks for listening.